Tonight, we want to look at the power of images, messages, and behavior, and how they feed into our action every day, consciously and unconsciously. But before I go on into the rest of the session about those particular things, I wanted to share with you an insight that was brought out yesterday by one of the participants here when they were talking about internalized oppression. And what the comment made reference to is how we take those names, those slurs, and then turn it in on ourselves, and it either works for us or works against us. And internalized oppression is showing up in our society these days. As you might know, that we see a lot of crime in our inner cities, and particularly in different communities of color, is what is happening about the crime issue among African Americans. You know, when we talk about black-on-black crime, or the Native Americans with their situation within the families, and the Asians with their the drugs and the gangs that are slowly building up, but they're on a rapid pace because we aren't aware of that. But it has to do with internalized oppression. So those kinds of words and phrases that we got out can work for you or against you. And the comment that was made was to see how one could turn those around and be affirmative. Well, what we're experiencing, though, is when they're so negative and so depressing, they tend to become oppressive and work against a group of people. In our third session, which will be tomorrow, rendering stereotypes obsolete, I want to declare that amongst us in this day and time, stereotypes are obsolete. They no longer work. And what we have discovered in our exercises is that they are very hurtful, dehumanizing, and all those things you mentioned before. And once again, to refer back to that, another gentleman came up to us and was saying, you know, at first when you asked me to do those phrases and try to come up with those slurs, I couldn't come up with anything until the group started talking. And then all of a sudden, they came up. And then he asked himself the question, where in the world did they come from? He couldn't generate them at the beginning. But once he started hearing them, he began to think about them. And then he asked about the origin of them. That, to me, underscores the fact that they are obsolete. You don't even know where they really came from or why they were in existence anyway. So we're going to work from that premise that they're no longer adequate in our relationships with one another. And on our fourth session, Discerning Pathways of Change, which will be on Friday, we're going to look at strategies and tactical ways within our communities. Last week, we looked at ways that we could work on that in our local churches. This week, we're going to work on our communities. And no matter where we show up, how are we going to work within the structures of our communities for change? And looking at the pathways and the sociological forms that need to change to move from monoculture to multiculture. And then on Saturday, in our last session in the morning, we want to begin to explore in our imagination what would it be like to have the players and the makers of policies and practices to be around the table, to think in a different way, to look at our forms and modes of decision making and create new images and ways of building community. So that basically is going to be our five sessions, and you are welcome to attend them as you can, over against everything else that's going on. And then we also have some things to hand out at that time, too, to share with you, to take back with you from Holden. But this evening, I want to take some time and share with you three dynamics. And those dynamics have to do with images, messages, and behaviors. First of all, this basic theory, and our resource here is a man by the name of Kenneth Boulding. He's done a book, written a book called The Image. And its basic premise is that human beings operate out of images. Images determine behavior. messages reinforce images, and when messages change, images change, therefore behavior changes. You follow that theory, basically? Makes sense to you? Well, he says that that is how we relate to our world, our community, our neighborhoods, our families, whatever it is, that those images that are first given to us, we use those throughout our entire life. And we use those in such a way that they are helpful or unhelpful. First of all, if you look at his thinking about the world, we do have a picture of the world somewhere in our imagination. And when a message comes in about that world, it breaks in upon us. Now, it could change our picture of the world from the message. And then, therefore, our behavior would then change about the way we relate to the world. And then we would act differently. I remember also when our friend Jonathan was sharing with us the picture of the Middle East, and he asked us about vacation spots in the world. If we ever had a chance to take those, where would we go? Well, we were clear where we wouldn't go. Very clear, very easily got that, because of the way in which we relate to the world. And Bowling's theory is that same very premise. We use these three dynamics throughout our society. It is part of a socializing process. We have ways in which we are taught through education, and our religion, and our politics, and our families. Everything is used through images, messages, and behavior. And when you think back to when you were born, you actually came here with a clean, clear slate. You didn't know anything about it, but there was a stream of messages, streams of consciousness flowing into you, if you think about the way that you and I have grown up, and then the power and patterns and practices in which those things were just drummed into us day to day, and here we are as who we are in our society. Well, the way that works is, who remembers some of the basic images that was associated with girls? What are some of the basic images that we have of ourselves as girls?
Dolls.
Pretty.
Sugar and spice.
Sugar and spice and everything nice. And what are little boys made of?
Dogs.
Puppy dog tails and
blue.
Mm-hmm. Blue, the color blue.
Purple. Purple and pink for girls.
Oh, purple and pink for girls. Okay, and so what are some of the toys that were associated with boys? Trucks, soldiers,
guns,
cars, trains. What were the toys associated with girls other than the dolls?
Teapots,
dishes,
house.
Dress up, be nice, whatever. Uh-huh. Now, what did that suggest to you in those images? What was that suggesting to the girls in those images, the females?
That
meant you were going to stay home, submission.
Dress up, tea. I mean, who's going to use tea in the workforce? I mean, you're not going to go play tea with your fellow.
Okay.
Work women.
Who? What was the suggestion about boys?
Aggressive,
tough.
Rough and tough.
Rough and tough. Action.
Violent.
They don't cry.
Boys will be boys.
Boys will be boys. Uh-huh. And what was... And girls will behave. sugar and spice was the line for the girls. What was the boys' line we just rehearsed? Frogs and snakes and snails. And puppy dog tails. Mm-hmm. Where did that come from?
Mother
Goose rhymes. And out of what?
Out of his pocket.
Uh-huh. And who do we usually pick for bold, aggressive type of leadership in our society?
The men.
And we are in a society that we've had men running this country for quite a long time, right? Where else have men showed up? not only in our society, but where else?
Churches.
What?
In the ministry.
Uh-huh. Workforce.
Universities.
Universities, a leader. All of those things. Now, the message that comes through to you about that is what? When we have all that? The way that our society is structured.
Men are in control.
Men are in control. They have the power.
Women are subservient.
Women are subservient.
Underneath them, we're not able to reach that level that men.
Men are more intelligent.
Thank you. Okay. And then our behavior is what? How do we react in this situation now?
We're protesting right now, aren't we?
But
This is
the way that you, once you understand the power of images and messages and behavior, these are the kind of human beings that you have, right? If you set them up, they were supposed to lead, and you program them all through the society like this, this is what you have.
But if you're a person who questions what is given to you, you're something, part of thinking.
Yeah, we're going to get to your part. You want to get us out of this, but not so fast.
It's okay. There's studies that show that girls in school already know they should be successful, even in terms of their education, but they start backing away early on.
Their goals are much lower.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh, you guys are almost giving this whole presentation. When you do this with a group, when you think about the images and the messages and behavior of a particular ethnic group, just say, for instance, we can come back to the African Americans and all our images about the African Americans and where the names and all that have come from. I have a personal story to share with you just briefly. There was one time when the African Americans were given names. The name first was called nigger and house nigger and all those kinds of phrases. Then the next was Negro. They got a little bit more sophisticated. And then the next group of names that came in was black. And now the current use of a word is called African American, which is more acceptable to the heritage. And what that does is shows the progression of how people are still trying to control a group of people in terms of where they're coming from and who they are. Now, when the name shifted from black to African American, there's something happened in the imagination to turn that around to say that we're black and black is beautiful and all of that. But it happened to come from the people. When the people start naming themselves and make a difference for themselves, it's a whole different reality. Then you get a different kind of behavior. And then the messages start to become different because it's the people who take on and take the stand of showing how it is that they start doing the naming rather than having someone else give them the names. So then you have a different reality. So when women start speaking up and talking about who they are, they too start sending out different kinds of messages and saying who they are, and their behavior changes, and therefore it causes another reaction from another group of people, mainly the male population, and that also changes. But images, messages, and behavior are very, very strong dynamics, and the clue and key is who is doing the naming. Where do these messages come from? And then how the behavior shifts. Well, this bit of individual background based on the theory of images, messages, and behavior is something that underlines and underlies all of our ways of education and how it feeds into our architect and the structures of how we set up different types of things, meaning our communities, everywhere around. But nobody ever said that was what was going on. That's just the way it was going on. Another powerful channel is through communication and the media. How often have you looked at the TV and watched the power of images, messages, and behavior in our time, and watch what groups are now in the limelight and what groups aren't? So as far as you know, based on the media, there are a lot of things that just don't exist, right? If left up to the media. And the messages that are there is that they don't exist. Therefore, you don't have to consider anything about any of these different types of groups in our society and what we're faced with today. So when you do this with any ethnic group, they are over against the power of the larger society. And here I want to bring in something called double consciousness. For people of color, double consciousness is a real reality. Anybody know what I mean by double consciousness? You know how that acts? No. Okay. W.E.B. Du Bois was talking about the fact that most of us in society have to play the role or think white and act white at the same time. Now, he was not saying be white people. He was saying we just have to think that way and act that way in order to be acceptable. But that's only true for people of color. That's not true for Euro-Americans. They've never had that requirement, and they never will be in a situation where that's required of them. Double consciousness is thinking what the society is expecting of you at the same time trying to be who you are. And that's a tough job. That's also part of the survival tactic that people of color have learned to do in our society. You had to figure out a way that society would, quote unquote, be accepting of you, but you'd have to do the acting in order and at the same time maintain who you are. So you had this dynamic of double consciousness. And that is something that we live with day to day. Every person of color has to live with that. And in the workforce, if they're trying to be leaders, whatever it is, they're over against that. Because, one, you're not expected to be a great leader, for one thing, and you can't achieve exactly the measurements of the majority of society. But at the same time, if you do it and you do it okay and well, then you're all right. But just all right. Not thoroughly supported by what it is that society wants you to do. So double consciousness is something we have to live with day to day. Now, through the practice of images, messages, and behavior, everything is learned. You are taught. Did you notice that? You remembered those rhymes. You remembered those dolls. You remembered all of that. All of that is acquired. All of that is learned. Racism is learned.
Carefully.
Ingrained. And therefore, it can be unlearned. It can be changed. That's how everybody is in racism's grip. We have acquired a way of dealing with our society from that perspective. We have to dismantle and get rid of this psychological baggage that has been learned and taught, and therefore we behave in such a way that acts out this learned behavior. Another example of that is through our education process that I keep coming back to, along with the communication and media. If you think about the ways that you were educated, how often were you allowed to even study information about other heroes or heroines other than your own culture?
To graduate from high school, you have to study now in California.
Now.
You have to take a whole year of history other than America.
But that's new.
But that's new. And that's That's great. Your generation is working on that. We're going to, our hats are off to you in that sense. But for most of us in this room this evening, how often were you given the opportunity to hear the other story? Who were some of the heroes that you were taught about that were not from your culture?
Booker T. Washington was the only one I ever heard of.
Okay.
Missionaries.
Some missionaries, uh-huh. But not very often. Hmm? Yes, in the modern day time. Yeah. Okay. We have a few.
Your defining culture in America is either African American or non-African American. Because
what was that? Wait a minute now. What did
you're
you
defining
say?
Culture in that way because, for instance, most of my heroes, as I think of it, did not come from the cultural background that my parents were proud of. They
no, I'm not defining culture. No.
But what are you talking about, a different background? Because I had a strong sense that these were people I should admire, but they were not in my heritage.
Oh, no, I was asking the question about in the education process who you were allowed to study.
Right, and that's yeah, those people, by and large, were not people... You know, they were, in a sense, foreign. I mean, it depends on what you mean by culture. Are you going to say that all non-African Americans have the exact same culture, and therefore you can all admire George Washington?
No. Not all of anything has the exact same culture. But my question had to do with the ways in which we are socialized and what we are learned and what we are taught, and then who are the models that are set up for us. We were discussing the fact that some of us were cut off from learning anything about a few from different culture background. That's what I was talking about here. And that was only, and then the people just brought out, no, we were just a few people that we were allowed, and in American history you focused on America as the center of attention. Go ahead.
My world was so small that when I was a senior in high school in 1954, living in all-white southern Minnesota, and the Supreme Court decision came down to integrate schools, I did not know what the fuss was about. I did not, you know, we didn't have television, mm-hmm. and I hardly knew that there was any other culture other than what mine was like. That's...
Mm-hmm. And when you're given just a brief or limited amount of information, that also sets you up for not knowing and the kind of images and messages and behavior that you will have. So when you're thrown into something totally new, you don't even know how to react, other than what we discovered by fear or just isolation, or we better stay away from that. Because the images that we're given are particularly controlled by the dominant society, whatever that might be. The messages come in. This pen is not writing. And inform those images. And then messages inform behavior. And then you're reacting. So it's interrelated with both the image, the message, and the behavior. And when those things are different, then you have different human beings.
I grew up in an all-black situation. Everybody in my community was African American, but we were taught from day one how to deal with and how to react to white people.
Mm-hmm.
The people who came and collected money for insurance were white. When we went downtown to pay bills, everybody was white, and we were taught how to act in the presence of those people. And parents who did not teach their children that, generally the children suffered for it because mm-hmm. they didn't know how to act and react when whites were present.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes, I guess in terms of how much emphasis would you put on this, because most cultures come here and attempt to integrate, whether it's the Irish or whether it's the British, right, become Americans. So some of the concerns I hear is that when everybody from Africa, the black history, the Mexican history, bilingual, pretty soon everybody's diluting the energy to become, to learn the basic skills, he said, of surviving in the country and becoming part of the country, but then they lose out. And that's mm-hmm. a danger in your mind with I mean, you know, just because if you have, I mean, somebody could say, hey, we got black basketball stars here, so, you know, guys, look at those. You know? But to his, I'm wondering how much emphasis would be put on that as an important becoming part of the country.
What we're trying to deal with in our sessions now is how to deal with the fact of not losing the identity, but the way the process works. And that's why we were talking about the images of diversity and trying to have people now, because where we are is to acknowledge that diversity and the richness of the multiracial groupings and multicultural backgrounds, to give them a chance not to lose or to assimilate for the sake of assimilating to become quote-unquote American, but to gain from the diversity and how that's going to look now. So
it's most to the black community, the feeling about itself, or the prejudices outside of it?
I missed the first part of what you said.
What are you trying to change most?
What am I trying to change most?
The black community feels, or the prejudices outside of the community? What are you trying to change most?
What am I as the individual trying to change most?
Yeah.
Institutionalized racism, because I experienced it quite a bit.
Is that internally in the black community, or is that outside?
No, that's in our society.
It's everywhere.
But I personally am trying to deal with institutionalized racism. In the area of education, we have had an experience both with our son and our daughter that there's a, is it implicit or explicit? Which one is it you don't see? Implicit. There's a tracking system that if you are perceived as achieving in certain courses, then you're tracked to that way. If you're not, then you're tracked to some other way.
Yeah.
I had an experience of my own in high school where the counselor was supposedly aiding me in my vocation for life, and I wanted to take business courses and secretarial science, and et cetera. And she suggested to me that the best thing I could be was a cook or a seamstress. And therefore, I should take these courses. Hey, that's what happened. There's an implicit, and that's still true. Because women are not attracted towards science courses to become chemists or whatever, or engineers. And guys are not headed toward the kitchen to become great dietitians. I mean,
in schools now, it's found that girls are the ones that are going out and getting the better grades, going for more of the science and math courses. The guys go into wood shop and mechanics. I mean, it's changing a lot.
Well, that's good to hear. But that's the issue of what we're trying to deal with in institutionalization.
All over, I think you were in a fairly progressive area from California.
Yeah.
It's not a massive change by any means.
Georgia, and I can guarantee you the schools in Georgia today are not as progressive as the attitude as they are in California.
Okay, I've got to stop. My timekeeper has given me the alarm because we got a 15-minute video to watch how the dynamics of image and messages and behavior shift.
And I think the video really is going to relate directly to some of the questions that have been asked. And if it doesn't, then we can continue to talk.
Yes, we'll be here before Vespers.
Yeah, one of the difficulties with an hour time slot is that you are over against the necessity of deciding whether to share the resources you've brought or just continue to talk. And hopefully the resource we brought will help answer some of those questions. We're going to show you a video that's called Eye to Eye. And it's a video that documents some of the work of Jane Elliott. Are you familiar with Jane Elliott?
Yes.
Jane Elliott is a former teacher from Iowa who now has devoted really her life's work to dealing with racism. After she encountered and begin to understand the dynamics of prejudice in her classroom with a little experiment she did with the children. And the video was an adaptation of her work in Minneapolis, St. Paul with a group of adults. But part of the background was showing a little bit of footage from her experiments with children, and that's what we want to share with you. As we watch the video, let me suggest to you that you watch for the dynamic of perceptions or images, messages that reinforce them or contradict them, and then behavior that flows out of that. In the time that remains to us, we want to spend a bit of our effort reflecting on what we've seen. You might be interested to know that Jane Elliott did her experiment with a group of adults, as the context in the video mentioned, a group of 43 adults, and it devastated them. I mean, it just devastated them. Some of them couldn't handle it and left.
Yeah, she was on Oprah Winfrey.
Right. Yes.
I watched it, and when I heard her name, my stomach.
All right, we'll come back and talk about that in a few minutes. Now, I want to ask you a few questions to get us going. And I want to suggest that what we want to do first is build kind of a common recall of what we've seen. So sit on your energy that wants to immediately start interpreting this and pulling it through your own life, and let's first repaint together what we've seen. What scene or line of dialogue do you remember that stays with you? And you don't have to interpret it or tell us what it meant, just tell us what it was. A scene or a line of dialogue. Anybody? Yes?
When the one child said the other one called him brown eyes.
Ah, yes. Yes, indeed. Yes.
Dog on a leash.
Like a dog on a leash.
Blue eyes are better than brown eyes.
Blue eyes? Yes.
Yeah, the teacher image and the students believing, you can see they believed what she said, even though they knew.
Uh-huh.
The boy who had his hands behind his head and he banged his elbow on the...
Yes. Is that the one that said, oh no? Oh boy. Oh boy. Yes. Yes, over here.
When the boy took his collar off and ripped it before he threw it away.
Oh, interesting, huh? There was somebody over here.
That's the same as he said.
Okay. Any other scenes or lines of dialogue? Yes.
The relief they all had when she said they could throw the collars.
Yes. Yes. Corporate relief, a sigh of relief. Uh huh.
When she slipped up.
Yes.
I punched him.
Who'd you punch? Oh, okay. Right, all right, yes.
He met on the playground?
Yeah.
On the first day when he was kind of sitting back.
Uh-huh. The three little girls with the blue tights on kind of standing together and just kind of not looking too happy, to say the least.
Okay, yes.
And the child who said that they didn't do as well with the cards the day before because they had these collars, they had to deal with these
interesting,
collars.
Huh? How perceptive those children had become. Have we missed any crucial lines of dialogue or scenes?
The part where the child associated it with calling black people niggers.
Uh-huh. Interesting connection that child made, wasn't it? Well, now, yes?
The fear that the teacher had, that she had unleashed something she couldn't imagine.
Yes, her comments. How frightening it was to her.
Uh-huh. There was a group of 9-year-olds, that's what she said.
There was a group of 9-year-olds. Yeah. How long did it take them to learn the lessons of prejudice?
15 minutes.
Does that shock you?
No.
Interesting, isn't it? We'll come back to that. Now, as you watched the video, what happened to you first physiologically? Were you aware of anything physiologically taking place? Did muscles tightened or stomach knot up or anything physical happen to you?
I started clenching my teeth.
Clenching your teeth? Uh-huh.
I heard her name and my stomach just tightened up.
Your stomach tightened up, okay.
I just do not like that woman for some... I mean, I know she's a great lesson, but...
All right, okay. Yes. Anything else physically happened to you? What about emotionally? Feeling-wise, what did you feel at any point?
Sadness.
Sadness. You felt sadness. Okay. Anything else? What were the feelings? Amazement. Uh-huh.
Guilt.
Guilt. Who said that?
Up here.
Oh, okay. Yes, okay. Any other feelings you had?
Well, kind of despairing that these kids could just change, you know. 180 degrees.
All right. What was the feeling now? Despair? I don't know if that's a feeling.
Fear?
Sort of the despairing that you can't help that.
Okay. All right, you're kind of moving us along, so let's just reflect kind of generally now. What was going on in this video? What was this about?
How? Feeling better than somebody else.
All right, you saw something about power.
Something I'm better than you just because of the color of my eyes.
Uh-huh.
And it has nothing else. I don't have to know you to be able to say that I'm better than you.
Yes.
Authority and stereotypes. Basically, the teacher was just basically telling him, brown-eyed people are better than blue-eyed people. That's a fact.
So the person who was in authority really kind of set the stereotype.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I felt the powerlessness. I could relate to that. I was a Lithuanian girl in a I grew up in an Irish neighborhood, so I thought son always said I'm the Irish people.
All right. Okay. Anyone else? Your comments about what was going on here? Yes.
I thought it was kind of amazing. She said, put these collars on so we can recognize you from a distance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and the power that that gives, that you can recognize from a distance what someone is. You don't even have to get close to them.
You
can feel superior even from a distance.
Did that make connections for you with anything? Any lights come on as you heard that?
Anybody?
Yeah. Well, yes.
I was just thinking how sad it is how receptive they were to indoctrination, and I don't think it's just because they're children. Only one child protested at the very beginning, and he was quickly quieted.
Huh. Uh-huh.
And no one questioned it.
No, and of course, you know, they're third graders.
Yeah.
This is their teacher.
This is their teacher. We look up to this person.
Well, makes you wonder.
You've already been brainwashed to believe her.
Yeah.
Makes you wonder who the authorities are in our experience that we might not question.
But the half of the kids that were in power didn't want to question. They didn't want to lose that power.
Once the experiment was going. Interesting. Yes.
The whole thing reminded me exactly of how I had learned French. And how I had become racist, because the first message that I can remember that black people are inferior, I swallowed it.
Uh-huh.
It was accepted because it was given to me by an authority figure, by my father.
Uh-huh. Yes, John.
I thought how much our inclination is to divide people into groups, old, young, fat, thin, make all these divisions, and once you make the divisions, then you put people in the category. And she was just relying on this. It's,
uh-huh.
it's human nature to want to divide people. We do that when a child is born and they can't even tell the difference. We treat them as male or female, as husky or weak. You know, we make those distinctions immediately and they start applying them. And you, it's a very easy human thing to do to impose different distinctions on
you. She added something extra, didn't she? In addition to making distinctions, what did she add?
Well,
the negative value for the distinction.
But that's a part of almost all the distinctions that we do make.
Yes.
That simplifies the complexities of life.
Certainly does, doesn't it? Certainly does.
Really?
Yes.
You don't have
All right. Yes.
One of the things that I noticed wasn't just what was going on there, but what was going on here.
What did you notice?
I noticed that we knew what was happening.
Uh-huh.
And some of the comments the children would make that we knew the meaning she was trying to, and we laughed. And I guess that sort of bothered me.
Okay. Uh-huh. Yes.
I was trying to integrate that into a sense of that a kid, a bully in school, picking on somebody who's smarter or wears glasses, or whatever. I wonder if he learned that. I'm not sure it was from his parents to pick on the smart kid. Class. I don't know. I'm trying to integrate that and see how that worked, how that fit. I'm sure you learned that.
Did you see anything that related to that in the video? Any bullying going on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Calling names and then the fight. And they're defending
brown eyes.
Well, I was defending all the brown eyes and the blue eyes. I was probably defending all the blue eyes, you know.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I felt Maylene's message. I felt like I was a dean. How I could have felt, how awful I felt through the years because how people would feel toward me. And I think if you put yourself in the shoes of a colored person with different color, the message is there immediately.
Yeah.
You don't even have to think about it. So it must be an awful feeling.
Okay, yes.
I think a perfect example of image to message to behavior is someone like me who was raised in Alaska and didn't know any black people at all, going to the movies in the 30s and the 40s.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
The image we got sent us a definite message.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
Completely.
What was the image?
Stephen Fetchett.
Has that been fetched?
That's okay. All I have to all say. Right.
Now, let me ask you one other question before we jump off video to our experiences in everyday life. In terms of what you saw on the video, where did you see the dynamic of images, messages, and behavior going on? Was that clear to you at any point? Yes.
Well, it's really clear when she changed groups from brown-eyed to blue-eyed. And asked, I thought that they would have learned something from their experience of being an underdog, but it was like the rage of being the underdog just multiplied their prejudice when they were on top.
Yes.
Yes. I would think those children would have a residue of hurt.
Yes.
Both groups. And I would think as a child I would kind of resent that teacher doing that to me, because when I was wearing the collar I would feel worthless.
Interesting comment, isn't it? Now think about this experiment and what it dramatizes, and then think about the folks who can't take the collars off and put them down.
Right.
And the comment about the residue of hurt.
Yeah, but there was nothing that I saw there that brought up what might have been carried over in that.
That's right. That's right.
As far as I can see there, and from a certain experience that I have had in other things somewhat similar like that, when you set up a contrived situation like this, it's how rapidly the whole thing just goes back to normal.
No, I don't think so. If I was a child in that situation, I think that there would be a residue of hurt and resentment.
She lied.
She lied. And how your friends were able to do that to you.
This is an interesting line of conversation to take. Let me just suggest to you that our report to you that they interviewed students who were participated in those experiences, and as adults, they testified that that experience changed their lives, and that they remembered it vividly as adults, as if it happened yesterday.
And they liked her a lot.
Change it positively.
Yeah, they liked
it. Change their lives.
Positive
what?
Or negative?
How did it change their lives?
Well, let's not ask the question about positive or negative. Maybe that's an evaluative judgment we ought not be too quick to make. Their comment was that it changed their lives, and that they remembered it as if it was yesterday, and it helped them grasp what racism was about. All of them that were interviewed were very affirmative.
And they can see the rest of it.
Yes,
I mean, we'll leave
right.
it here to see the rest of it.
What if they would generalize that into the teasing the fat girl or the in class or something like that? What if they would take that as not only racist but as in general cruelty?
Well, certainly those dynamics would be there. However, dynamics like that pale over against the power of racism in our society. And a lot of it simply has to do with some of the things that were pointed out by Verlon. Putting a collar on so you can see them, distinguish them at a distance. Very easy to notice a person of color before they even get within, close enough to tell who they are. Yes?
And yet when you asked what the collar reminds us of, nobody said anything.
Oh, okay. All right, well, we've got about 4 or 5 minutes left, and maybe in the next couple of minutes, let's kind of tie together. I know we'd like to talk more about this. Kind of tie together our reflections on the video. Was this a troubling video?
Yes.
Troubling.
Was it a troubling video?
Yeah.
Yes. Did it leave you with questions?
Yeah. When does that ever happen to me? I could ever be trained to think that way.
We all are.
Yeah. And how you can get past that so you can question what.
One thing that's interesting to ask ourselves is what are the subtle messages in our society that we usually don't even notice that reinforce perceptions of people that are unreflective, that we've really not decided about? Are there any other dynamics in your experience that were not in the video that this triggered for you?
Well, I was just thinking of Nazi Germany, especially when she said, could I think that way? How a whole Christian culture, highly cultured nation, overnight could, the racial prejudice that was there. I mean, it's just amazing.
The movie The Wave, have you ever seen that?
Yeah.
It was a study done in San Jose that did that, where they turned the whole class like that. They were just totally, it was just being part of this group, and it was just being part of the group, and there was
people were trying to be beat up and everything, and it was so strange to watch. They weren't doing it on color of someone's skin. It was just being part of the group.
Okay.
And
right.
If you weren't part of the group, I mean, it was really. Oh.
Okay.
We
will make the video available if we want to set up a time where several of us sit down and watch the whole video. We felt bad about only showing you this little snippet, but there was no way with the time frame
well,
we could.
Well, it still strikes me pretty
yes.
artificial, though. It's
yes.
Another example,
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
I said the conflict in Yugoslavia today.
The conflict in Yugoslavia. Yes. Yes.
And the Jews and Palestinians, how the oppressed can become.
And the Jews and Palestinians.
I think it's happening right here today in our society. The abortionists
okay.
and the non-abortionists, the pro-choice
and the right.
non-abortionists.
And our colleague here feels that it was artificial and his wife disagrees with him. And
well, on
that point.
That's great.
On that point, we'll leave the video and allow it to sit with us and continue to talk to us. And we will return tomorrow in our next session to dealing some more with images, behavior, stereotypes, and Nadine's going to close us off.
Only one last wrap up, and that is to say, she said she did this experiment in 15 minutes and watched the change, and what is taking us so long when we've been struggling with this minute? That's all I'm going to leave us with that question. Isn't that amazing?